Welcome to the Innovative Teaching Podcast. Today, your hosts are myself, Jeanette Schaefer,
Cyan Proctor,
and Patricia Herrera.
And today we've decided we're just going to chat. It's kind of an informal chat about what we're playing around with and exploring in VR and AR, which is virtual reality and augmented reality. Cyan's on a mission here. This is a passion of hers for this year and probably next year. So I'll let her kind of kick it off as far as what she's been doing, and we'll get the conversation started.
Thanks, Jeanette. One of the things that I'm interested in, I'm a geoscience professor at South Mountain Community College, and that's keeping my curriculum up to date. And I've always been technology savvy to some extent, and I've noticed that augmented reality and virtual reality are starting to become more accessible. Even in geoscience education, I've been using a couple of virtual field trips that were developed at Arizona State University, and I've applied to go on my sabbatical next year to do virtual reality and augmented reality stuff at ASU.
Yeah, and the one thing, just playing around, doing some research, I'm interested because I have a personal game, so something outside of teaching, but a game that I've always wanted to develop. So I'm interested for personal reasons, but I also use it in my content, CIS 105. But when I was exploring it and just looking for basically how to get started the other day, what I read was that augmented reality is going to be more, like, it's going to be here quicker than the virtual reality. So that's why I'm like, okay, that's perfect, because that's kind of my game idea. It's more augmented reality than virtual reality. So that's where I started digging in as far as how do I get started developing this game?
I totally agree with you. I think that augmented reality with the mobile apps and learning is going to be coming much quicker. We saw a lot of interest in Pokemon Go and people going and collecting their I don't even know what you call those little things that you collect. But as a geoscience teacher, I could see myself creating a field trip through South Mountain Park, maybe, where students, instead of collecting their little Pokemon, they collect rocks or rock samples. And that would be cool to be able to use that technology to do something like that.
And that would be awesome for my children, because I get tired of them bringing rocks home and they want to put them somewhere. And it's like, if they had virtual rocks, that would be way better for a lot of parents.
I definitely agree.
I agree, too. And also, with the virtual reality, I've been exploring with the Google Tour creator. So that would be another place for your class to be able to explore field trips, putting their information there and acting like you're there already. So,
yeah, I really love the idea of these virtual field trips, of being able to bring the world to your living room, to your classroom, to wherever you might be. And that's a lot of fun. I've got the Ricoh Theta 360. And so one of the things I want to do is go out and create these high resolution 360 images to give a feel of a particular place.
Yeah. And you could easily do that and upload your 360 images into Google Tour to share where you're going. We did that one for the Guadalupe Center, and we did that with the same camera. So
I play around with blogging, and it's normally related to family travel. And in that field, they're saying that most of the 360 video, it's a lot of going to places, recording videos so people can feel like they're there when they may never, ever travel there. So it's a way a person can experience and see what it would look like even though they can't go there.
And one of the things that I use in my classroom, ASU has these things they call IVFTs, Immersive Virtual Field Trips. And one that I use in my classroom is where the students get to go on a trip down into the Grand Canyon. So typically people will go just to the top, but this is actually a field trip to some really unique spots in the Grand Canyon. But the immersive part is that it's interactive. So students get to see, not only do they get to do the 360 environment, but they also get to hear videos and answer questions and interact with the media.
Another idea that one of our student interns that was sitting here working with us, we discussed the one day that it'd be really cool because we're looking at how can we do campus tours using this technology and make it meaningful for students. You can do a tour, right? You could do like the Google tour where it's just a video and you can see it without being on campus. But we were wanting to take it to that next level where it's interactive. So we were looking at it from the perspective of different types of students. So maybe it's a single mom coming on the campus. What would that experience and what type of character could we introduce into the AR to make it more welcoming and to get them where they need to go? But take all of our students, you know, the returning employee that just needs to polish up some skills or gain a couple of new skills. And, you know, what type of a welcome, what type of narrative would that person need to get them where they need to go to get registered and get the help they need?
Absolutely. You know, I also think that that's one of the things that we're not thinking about is that these virtual field trips help familiarize people with the campus. So a lot of times you're kind of scared to go into this new environment because you have no idea where to go, who to talk to, and all of that stuff. And so if you can go and experience the campus virtually before you ever step on the campus, that can relieve some of the anxiety, especially when you arrive on campus and you recognize things. There's familiarity and you're like, okay, this is where I go to register for classes, or this is where the bookstore is and things like that.
Yeah, when we looked at things earlier, we looked at the data, and that's one of the top uses of the 360 tours of campuses is people becoming familiar before they go to campus. And also, once again, since I have young children, I look at the mom role. It's like you have like 30 minutes to get on campus and do what you need to do and get off campus, right? So it's like if you know exactly where you need to go, what that building looks like, you can go straight there and get registered and get off campus. So
that's why I like Google Maps. Because when I go and I don't know where I'm going, at least I get to see it and be there. So when I'm there, okay, I'm on the right spot. I'm not lost.
The street views really help.
It does help a lot. And
especially if it's like a strip mall or a plaza where everything kind of looks the same.
Yes. So this virtual reality and the virtual tours, you will be able to put it also in Google Streets. So then people could actually explore your campus, your business, or anywhere you're traveling. So that's really neat.
Yeah. Now, Cyan, I know you mentioned something about when you went to one of the virtual reality forums discussions that you mentioned something about a environment that looked a little bit like Second Life, but was completely different and kind of amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Do you remember?
I think it was
Facebook?
Facebook Spaces.
Okay, Facebook Spaces.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. And I'm kind of excited about this because it allows you to pop into a space with an avatar that you designed, and you're in a virtual immersive environment, and you can interact with the other people in that environment, and it can be from around the world. And so you can imagine that they're looking at, I think there's also one for venues where you can attend a rock concert in a virtual space, you can, or a soccer game, or even, like I said, create a virtual classroom. And so that's coming down the pipeline now. I know that I applied for and I got an account to go and check out that. And I just haven't had time yet. But
yeah.
I'm excited to explore that.
Well, maybe we can do another podcast later after you've played and tell us all about it.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that, you know, as I get prepared for my sabbatical next year, thinking about how do I create these augmented reality experiences. I'm not a coder. I don't have a background in computer science. And so as an instructor who wants to use this, thinking about what are the ways that I can easily adapt that. And I think there are companies out there like Facebook making spaces that you can drape in 360 that you take and then do things in there. Also the Google stuff. But I think what we need is we definitely need these. We need to get the technology to the point where all the coding on the back end is already done. And what we can do is bring in the media content and say, okay, I want 360 here, and then I want to put a video here, and then I want to bring up this document that students can click on and fill in here. And so it becomes more plug-and design than actual, you know, coding from the ground up.
Yeah, we need a coder.
We need a coder, a graphic artist,
multimedia.
There's a whole list.
Yes, we definitely do. Well, so I started looking into what do you need to know to get started, and I was trying to start at the very, very basic level. I have an iPhone, and I'm interested in designing for mobile because of the game idea I have. I want it to be mobile. And AR kit is the development kit for iPhone. I know there is an Android development kit also. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also looking at Unity because in Pokemon was used doing the Pokemon Go's used Unity. A little bit of a tongue twister there. I couldn't get it out. So that's kind of where I'm starting and exploring. But it's like, it's funny because once you read into it, it's like, okay, you need to know this. Get started with this. Well, now you need to add in this piece. Well, now you'll want to add in this piece. And it's like, oh, wow. Okay, now we're in over my head.
It is. It's a little bit daunting at thinking about, you know, how much coding do I need to know to be able to be successful at this? And I'm looking at taking a couple of classes myself that just gets even the terminology of how we talk about augmented reality space and objects in augmented reality and how they are manipulated and all of that stuff. Just getting the vocabulary down is the first step that I'm at right now.
Yeah. And the one thing I looked at, it says that marker-based AR is the easiest to get started with. And what they mean by marker-based is that it's activated by an object.
Absolutely.
So it's like, that's kind of where, it looks like that's like AR 101.
I think that that's really useful. One of the things that I show students when I start talking about this is the NASA logo and NASA 3DV. It's an app that you can use where on any NASA logo, you can basically, the app recognizes the logo and then you can launch a rocket off of that app. It's really cool. And that's some of the things that I'm doing. So I just got in the mail this thing called Zapbox, and it's from England. And it's kind of like that thing that you were saying where it's interactive. It's a box for me to be able to create a VR environment in, you know, any space. And it's got all these cardboard markers that the app will recognize, and then I can manipulate stuff in that space. I'm excited to try it out. It just came yesterday, and it was a Kickstarter kind of campaign, and so I was like, this is worth me getting and trying and figuring out how useful it is.
So it looks like you've got what appears to be like the Google Cardboards.
Right, I got those
glasses. And then it looks like a magic wand. So what is that thing?
I think that these are the markers that I use to mark 3D space, but I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
But it's really interesting. Again, these graphics, what we're seeing in augmented reality is that you can have a graphic that your app will recognize, and then you can create something or manipulate something in that space. A lot of museums are starting to do this. Mm-hmm. We had QR codes that people would use.
Right.
But now they're doing it where you can go up and have a piece of art on the wall and just use the app to look at the art, and it automatically becomes augmented with all of this additional information, including videos and things like that.
And that would be awesome in the classroom, because if anyone still does old-fashioned worksheets, you know, you could have an image or an object or something there that activates the AR, and then you've got the full video. And
that's exactly what I was thinking, is that even for online, if you just created kind of weekly worksheets that were augmented, then you could have the students print out and work on that and do interesting things in that space.
Yeah, and I know the other thing we're working on here at South Mountain Community College is the universal design of learning. And one of the big components of that is multimodal.
Right.
So this would really help add those extra pieces and components to help people that learn, have different learning styles.
You know, both my master's and PhD research was in visual spatial learning and reasoning. And so this is right up my alley. And what I like about the geosciences is it's a very visual spatial discipline. And I could just see being able to have students be able to cut through layers of the earth and visualize them in a way that it's hard to do in two dimensions.
Exactly. I was in a course, an online course, and they were also sharing how YouTube, you're able to upload these 360 videos and be able to do the virtual reality, right, without even having the mobile device or cardboard. And what was interesting is that, I don't know if it was NASA, probably, they had two individuals that took their 360 camera, and they were able to put it into the air, into the atmosphere, where we can't even travel because then we'll be burned and stuff. So that was nice to see the Earth from that angle. And I'm like, and they did that in 2016. So we're still scratching the surface, but there's things that they're doing. It's really neat to be able to experience that.
I totally agree. And that's what gets me excited about the future of teaching and learning and ways of, you know, developing content to get this new generation coming up really engaged and immersed in the experience.
Yeah, because AR and VR is not just about playing games. And I think that's where everybody's into. Oh, it's just to play games. It's just to put it in your eyes. No. And then you're just playing all this stuff. But no, it's even further than that. You could experience real life thing. And when we got our first virtual reality computer, to me, I love exercising. I like hiking low level. I would never climb a mountain. And with the virtual reality, I was able to climb a mountain and be able to see everything from below and everything. I would never have done that in person because I'm afraid of heights. So that is amazing for me. And that's what I told Jeanette. Jeanette, okay, I'm ready to explore this even further. Because to me, I was like, it's just to play games. What else can you do with this?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it's quickly opening up new realms, a new space in education, basically, is what it's developing into. And that's exciting.
Yes, to be part of this and exploring it and seeing what we're going to be able to create and deliver to our students. That'll be amazing.
So I have a merge cube in my hand trying to play. We played with this before, and to be honest with you, I didn't get it. I don't know if the app doesn't work the way it's supposed to, user failure, I'm not sure. But I just pulled the app up because I'm like, well, let me give this a try again, because you're supposed to enter an object code. So what this looks like, it's a black cube that has a bunch of like images on it, almost like hieroglyphics, I guess. And you put the code in and then you're able to interact with the object. But I can't get the object to load. So I don't know if it's user failure. I have the wrong code. Maybe there's a different code. I don't know. So merge cube, that's out there. If somebody wants to play with it and try to figure out, they look cool. They look like they'd be fun, but I can't figure out how to get it to work.
Well, I think that that's one of the things with this emerging technology is how user-friendly is it? And I think that we still have some hurdles to go. One of the things that you and I tried was the Lockdown, which was the free app that is basically an escape room that is augmented because you use your flat desk to bring up your dashboard.
Bless you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed that, and I have shown probably 20 people that app because it was so fun figuring out the codes with you and the way you rotated in 360-degree space to bring up more interaction.
It was a blast, and the thing is, the content was perfect for my CIS 105 class, So I was all excited. I was going to take the class, right? I have older devices. So I have older iPhone and iPads. I don't like to ask students to download or assume that they have a device that they can download. So I'll typically take my older devices, I'll set them up, download them, get them ready, and then I'll let them download it on theirs if they want to. Otherwise, they can use my devices. My devices were too old, so the app would not work on them. As a result, I didn't take it into class to do it as an activity because I'm like, what if the students have older phones like those? And they, you know, because I know in most cases, students have a smartphone these days. It's very rare that they don't. But they're not necessarily the latest and greatest.
That's correct.
So that was a hold up and a barrier that I encountered.
And I think that that's another big issue you bring up is the technology barrier. I know that I have computers at home that I still use. My desktop, there's no more updates or software updates for it. Like, basically, Apple has said, you need to buy a new desktop or, you know, too bad. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to, you know, this one's still perfectly good. But if I want to keep up with some of the new technology that's coming out, I have to. And that includes the phone. And I think that financially, when you're looking at these smartphones being $1,000 these days, it's a big investment.
It is.
Especially for students. But one of the things that I would rather see happen is that instead of students buying textbooks and spending $600 a semester on books that they'll use for 3 months and maybe only half of it, if they use it at all, I would love it if we as an institution would just say, you know, textbooks, let's go open educational resources and have students invest in a new phone or some kind of like laptop or something that they can use for their 2-3 years here on campus.
I think I would almost support that 100% because we do have Z degrees going on within our colleges in Maricopa. I know we're not doing it at South Mountain, but it is going on around the campus. I know Mesa, I think, that they're pretty heavy in it right now and getting ready to start collecting some data to see is it making a difference in impact. But yeah, that device they're going to have, it's their computer. They can, right? They don't have to come to class, get the information.
Right.
They come to class, get the experience and the knowledge and, you know, for the professor to really help them grow and direct them in the right way. But otherwise, they can just Google. I mean, you can find anything, almost anything on the internet. So,
and I think that that's it, you know, when it comes to digital literacy. And I just feel like, you know, some students still want that textbook experience, but it's not about putting the textbook online. It's about creating an immersive, interactive, media-rich experience in the digital world that you can't get in a two-dimensional piece of paper, which is your textbook. And I think that's the goal here is to make education more kind of active and interactive. And a textbook, you know, reading, I'm a big fan of making students read.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that you don't need the big chunky $150, $200 textbook anymore.
No.
I mean, you can give them supplemental, shorter kind of like 20-page reading, but then have that virtual, immersive, interactive experience that really allows them to go in and do something.
Yeah, we're really, you've mentioned a couple of things, because the one thing we're trying to do as a Center for Teaching and Learning is to really help faculty start thinking about how learning looks on mobile devices and how do you design and chunk your content so it's easily viewable and students can do their assignments on that device without ever having to be at a desktop. I really like, and I think one of the barriers with that, as faculty, we're not always thinking from that lens.
I totally agree. Our students are already there. Most of my students are doing their homework on their phone, but yet I'm not necessarily designing my content that way.
Yeah, and the students find a way and make a way because that's the only device they have.
Absolutely.
Where faculty, we're always like, well, they can just go to the computer commons, which we know our computer commons area, which is the area for students to use, it's only being used about 34% of the time. So the other 70-some percent, almost 70% of the time, students are on their devices. They're not in those computer labs anymore.
It's about learning on the go, when you want it, when you need it, when you have time to do it. And that's what the mobile device does. And it's almost one of those things where you could see, I just would like a model where we could put more money in putting this technology into the hands of the students somehow. Mm-hmm. And from day one, they have that.
Especially with Chromebooks now being so affordable, and then they're having a Chrome store where they can actually download different applications. And then we have Google Drive, where students can actually create all their documents on Docs, spreadsheets, forms, and be able to submit them through our learning management system. So it's already there. It's just now putting the puzzle together and making it accessible for our students.
And we actually have calculators that students have to sign out, and they get them for the semester, you know, and they there's a fee, and then they get that money back if they return it. But you could see having that kind of model for Chromebooks or something, so that we know that the students, you know, instead of coming in and getting a textbook, you know, let them get a laptop for the semester,
yeah,
and they for a certain small fee, that, and then when they bring it back, they get, you know, half of that money back or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know what the data is. I know some of the four-year institutions, they've implemented programs over the past years where tuition included a laptop or a Chromebook or a, but I don't know any of the data or the results.
I don't either, but, you know, those are things that I'm a real fan of, especially because digital literacy is one of the things that is part of the goal of us as educators.
Right. I listened to an Active Campaign. It was their education podcast, so where they, you know, people that use Active Campaign software, it's where it's a podcast to keep you educated and up to date on what's going on. And I like their idea of how they train their employees. The idea with their employees is that if any person calls in and they take the call, they should know, when it comes to the technology and the software, they should know at least what the average customer knows. I think that's many faculty would disagree with me, I'm sure. But I think that's excellent for faculty. When we have that student coming into the classroom, we should, at a minimum, know and be comfortable with technology based on the average student walking into our classroom.
Well, I tell you what, our average student coming in these days are a lot more tech savvy than we give them credit for. I continuously hear faculty saying how, oh, our students won't be able to do that, or they won't have the technology. And I'm like, that's not true anymore.
I know.
And what we're doing is, instead of catering to the 1% that might have difficulty, we need to cater to the 99% who are there or beyond, and really, really work our services towards that. But more often than I'd like, I keep hearing, oh, our students wouldn't be able to do that.
It's like, no.
That's not actually true. You know, they're doing it in my class. And if I can do it with, you know, a 65-year-old who hasn't been in the, you know, class for 40 years, they can do it.
Well, and the students are here to learn. So,
they are.
So they're willing to learn.
Right. And we should be pushing their comfort zone anyways. And we should be pushing our own comfort zone. And that's when we know that we're in that learning zone, is when we're, like, unsure.
Well, and that's one reason I bring it up, because the whole augmented reality and virtual reality, that scares people because they haven't done it. They don't know enough about it. They don't really understand the capabilities of it. I mean, we could sit all day and just brainstorm, oh, we could use it for this. Oh, how about let's try that? And this is a good idea. But others will just be like, ooh, I don't know what that is. I don't even want to go there.
It's going to be, we can mark this as the date where I say, I believe that within the next 2 to 5 years, I'm giving myself a little bit, but I'm thinking more 2 to 3 years, that your phone will actually ship with VR goggles instead of earbuds.
Exactly.
It's going to be coming down the pipeline sooner than we realize. Where, you know, we're all used to getting headphones with our smartphone. Well, you know what they're going to do? It's going to come with a little VR goggle instead.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. That'd be cool.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can already buy it as an accessory.
You can buy it as an accessory.
Or will it be more like a hologram type thing where you don't even need goggles?
Oh, that would be awesome.
Like the phone just kind of projects like a shield or...
I'm for that, too. It'll be interesting to see, but the technology's changing rapidly, and I'm excited for that. Okay, well, thanks for having me on today's episode.
Yeah, I'm really interested. I hope you get that sabbatical, and you can do a lot of research and bring that back to us, figure out... You'll find the easy way for faculty to implement VR into the classroom, we're hoping.
Yep, that's the goal. I'll find out, hopefully in January, if I'm going to be on sabbatical at ASU's, their Education Through Exploration Center. And so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that sounds like they're doing cool stuff over there. So that'd be nice to do an internship and get firsthand knowledge and experience of what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, well, we'd like to thank you all. If you're doing anything with virtual reality or augmented reality, please make comments. We're just getting started with this. We're just playing and exploring. We are by far not experts whatsoever. So we're just taking you on our journey as we explore and just share with you what we discover and learn.
And if you have any resources, send them our way.
Yes, yes. Thank you for tuning in and stay tuned for next week with another podcast of the Innovative Teaching Podcast.
Bye.